that better? Test. A
little more.
Check. One, two. Closer?
Yeah.
Whoa. Make love to that mic.
Oh, I can smell the hickory already.
There you go.
This is great.
Yes, make love to that mic. Not this mic. He's a married man. Nice.
Cookie, give me a little level.
Love the smell of hickory.
Nice.
I don't know if it was just the wood you guys used last year or what, but it's just... It has infused. Use the best wood.
The last picture with all of us like...
The tastiest.
Was
you used
really
the tastiest,
funny.
Best smelling wood. Your wood is so tasty.
I know, right?
So are we going to have to do a commercial for Bonfire brand wood or what?
I guess, man.
Can I do a jingle for it?
You're about to enter into a world where all those classic movie monsters are still alive. A time when scary movies were fun for the whole family. And a place where the only colors you'll find are black, white, and shades of gray. Welcome to the Mimiverse. Hello and welcome to this edition of the Mimiverse Bonfire Podcast, or as Cookie called it, the what?
Yeah, Mimiverse Remote Controlled Bonfire Podcast.
Don't forget Bonfire Scented as well.
Oh, yes.
And Bonfire Scented.
Yes, we're recording this episode in lovely Hudson, Wisconsin. There's a couple of reasons for that. We'll get to those in a second. But this episode, we're... telling the story behind Monster Phantom Lake the Musical! Exclamation point.
There you go.
Because it comes out on DVD
on March 9th.
March 9th.
There it is. Boom,
Monster
boom, boom, boom.
Day.
So this episode is going to be a little different. The voice you're hearing, Ruby, she's actually not my co-host today.
What?
No.
Are we breaking up on Valentine's Day 2017?
That would
my
be
God,
February
you have beaten
14th.
Her down so much
I
with
know,
the date
right?
that now she's giving it.
I hate you.
I love it.
Hate you.
Actually, no, she is our interviewee this time.
Oh, I'm a guest.
She's our guest. She's in the hot seat.
Yes.
The hot
it,
seat.
It actually says on the mic that I'm the fire tender, so pass the remote.
And she's the farthest away from the fire,
yeah,
which
girl.
Is fun. Anyway, so my actual co-host this episode is the one and only Mr. Christopher Armin.
Good afternoon.
With us, you heard his lovely voice before, the dulcet tones of Mr. Mike Cook.
Dulcet.
And it's with
Mike
us,
Cook with Cooking After Dark. And there's the blower.
There's the blower.
And also with us is Adam Bull, who we're happy to welcome him back to the show as well.
Hi, guys.
So we've got the three main players from the Monster Phantom Lake the Musical, in addition to Chris, who actually did
I think
did
we should
write.
Make a point to say exactly what it was each of them did.
Should we let them tell them?
Yeah, maybe we should. Maybe we should begin. Obviously, I wrote and created the Mimiverse, so I'm the most important person here, but... We don't need to go into that, so... No, but seriously. Mike, tell us what you did with the Monster Phantom Lake the Musical.
Damn if I can remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, me either. Moving on.
I was the artistic director of the show, meaning, you know, you go there, you go there, you go there.
Also, as far as I understand
right
it,
and wrong.
The keeper of the flame for the Mimiverse to make sure that these guys didn't run away with it and make it into the, you know, all drag queen version or whatever that Ruby wanted to do.
That's coming in March.
I tried really hard with that monster costume.
So the official hand slapper.
That's right. No. No. Can't do that.
Oh,
but also the official link to the original The Monster Phantom Lake.
Well, that's true, because I was in the film. And,
right.
You know, I had an idea on how, you know, it should look and all that other stuff, so...
And played Gustav. You reprised your role of Gustav in the musical.
Yeah, you betcha. I sure did, there you
go. Don't forget about that.
Yep.
Dulcet.
The dulcet tones.
Dulcet tones of Gustav.
You betcha.
I think you should probably release some sort of folk album after that.
Do the Burl Ives thing, you know. A little bitty tear let me down.
I want a
whole... be a Christmas album, though.
Dude, you could release
Gustav's
it on...
Gustav's Christmas album.
What did he sing for Christmas? Have a holly jolly Christmas, eh?
There you go. Oh, jeez.
I have a feeling people are going to be clamoring for that on SaintEuphoria.com.
You know what's going to happen is these two are going to go down some stupid, slow-moving body of water. They're going to write the next Canoe Cops movie. That's what's going to happen. We just need to set it up.
You know, someone gave me a cool idea for another way to expand the Canoe Cops.
Uh-oh.
You know, you had the Canoe Cops, and Ruby, of course, banged away at the Paddle Girls until they made it into a movie. Someone said to me we should create Paddle Scouts.
Oh,
just because like, they wanted a role.
Is that the junior auxiliary?
Yeah, it's the kids, right? Oh. It's like the Boy Scouts. It's the Paddle Scouts.
Okay. Someone should write that and make it happen.
So, anyway
getting back.
Moving on to the next guy.
I'm Adam, and I
Hi,
watched.
Adam.
Hi, Adam.
And I have some things I'd like to get off my chest.
Right.
Ooh, we're going to be able to do that. Let's do that.
The Mimiverse After Dark.
This is really why we're giving you alcohol.
Oh, great. I watched a lot of Chris's movies and then ended up, after we decided we were going to make this happen, I kind of watched the movie and sketched out places to put music in it and tried not to make it too weird in a way that Chris would tell me no and Mike would slap me for doing. So I wrote the music and lyrics, and then
it is a Mimiverse thing, so
then kind of tried to provide moral support after we got the project going, and then with a surprise turn of events I ended up also running sound for the show.
Sorry about that.
And I would say with all the songs you wrote, I think I only really told you to rewrite one lyric.
And it was probably a good choice. I forget what it was.
I remember now. It was
Nasty.
A lyric where, yeah, it was Amy, it's during college, and Amy says the thing about how Elizabeth's hair is so lifeless, she should buy a hat. Whatever you came up with was like, whoa, that's too much.
It was nasty the first
time.
It
was really nasty. I was like... That's a little too much.
Nasty like mean,
lifeless.
Though, or nasty?
Greasy.
It was really
inappropriate.
It was too harsh.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, okay, that's she's mean,
much.
But that's she ain't that mean. You know what I mean? So we just scaled that back, and that was the only thing I think I was like, I like everything but that. And it was fixed within like 5 minutes.
Out of 20,000 words, you changed one or two.
Yep.
Yeah. Not bad.
Well, thank you again, Adam, for coming on down to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Fantastic. All right, Rue, what did you do?
So I started out in the Mimiverse as a super fan.
Fail.
Chris's friend.
Fail. You want to know why she just failed right there?
Why?
What does she always say, especially during House of Ghosts?
No. I'll get there. I started out as a friend and a fan.
All right.
I started
now
out
she
not
hates
doing
everything
anything.
About it.
Shh. Don't tell Chris. Never did read any of those scripts.
Especially the ones you were in.
Right? I know. Oh, shit. Don't tell Chris. So, started out as a mega fan and never did stop liking Monster Phantom Lake the best.
Fills up her coffee with hey, more alcohol.
He's like my very own paddle girl. Thank you. We'll get a coffee warmer as soon
to
as I can step
away. Serve.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, I like you. So, anyway, I heard that this musical was pretty near fixing to happen, and I just started pestering on Mike, like, Ruby Lights, right? Ruby Lights? Ruby has to light this one. Mike, come on, buddy. And he was like, well, who else would do it? And I was like, oh, you're so sweet. And he broke my heart, and that was lovely. And
did you do much?
What'd you do?
By making me so happy. It broke my heart. No, not in a bad way.
You exploded her. So full of love, it
exploded.
Burst.
It exploded. So then we all three started talking about things and stuff and junk. And stuff started coming into my head. And I informed Mike that I really wanted to do a little bit more. And then I informed Mike that I'd like to do a little bit more. And then I started talking to Adam about some ideas I had.
And then we were like, hey, Ruby, you should paint a whole bunch of trees. How about a whole forest worth of trees?
Well, pretty much. I mean, it ended up being, I'm not going to say the Adam and Ruby show, because there was so much more than just us. However, everything you saw on that stage, probably one of us sweated, spat, or bled on it.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
The bloody trees.
I mean,
do we miss any fluids?
God, I hoped. I don't know. I don't want to know.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Going blue. Going blue.
Well, early to go blue.
So in the end, Ruby Lights, in addition, I worked on all the painted drops, the trees and the cut drop in the back. I built a fair number of hand props. And most notably, I sewed up the monster.
I think it
the
should
infamous
also,
monster.
I think it should also
monster.
Be said that if anyone who's listened to the show would know that Ruby has probably been the greatest, was probably the greatest cheerleader of the show.
Yes,
from
absolutely.
The point when we started to do it,
I had
it was
to talk
like
about
she just
it.
Wouldn't shut the f*** up.
I wouldn't, it's true. And I will not take a bit of credit for it, but like I felt so passionately about this. Like I don't think there's ever been a show before that I've said, I have to do this. It has to be in the Tainter, and it has to be me, and it has to be these guys, and it has to be, no. And yeah, so anyway, when you see the musical, if you haven't already,
there's so much Ruby DNA all over
the wonderful trees were almost completely Adam.
Just the puppets, you did all the cut drops.
I mean the big trees, the trees.
When you see it on the DVD,
and then
available on March 9th.
And actually, a lot of what we're talking about now, if you watch the photo gallery, you'll see a lot of the like pictures of Ruby making trees
in my driveway.
Oh yeah, there was no shortage. Yep. Oh, we'll get into those stories.
Instead of painting your house this year, you painted
in my garage on the floor, on my shoes, on my head. Anyway, and then the campsites were, I would say, at least half and half.
Well, hang on. Well, let's not get too
I'm just saying what we were working on. You did the stump. I mean. Everything. So, we all
when
did
she
it.
Says Ruby Lights, what she actually is saying, she was the lighting designer for the show. All the lighting on stage, that was all her. She did that. So lighting in theater is a little different than it is for movies. Actually, she'll tell you it's a lot different. So
yeah, lighting for movies is super easy.
Yeah, just fluorescent lights.
Oh boy.
Ruby's off mic, so I'm gonna take advantage of this silence here.
I should say you're going to hear some clanking every once in a while. We are recording this episode where I work in Hudson, Wisconsin now. I just started a week and a half ago. I'm not going to say the name of the company because I don't want people just stopping by. But but I wanted to do it here because they have a gas lit fireplace behind Cookie here. So
we get to do the bonfire, remote control bonfire podcast.
Right, I'm providing all the gas.
In February.
Bonfire scented podcast.
Right. One other thing that's actually kind of cool about doing this one here in Hudson.
What's that?
Is the true beginnings of doing the frickin' musical.
We're right here.
Started here in Hudson.
Yes.
Because it was the three of us.
That's right.
Went to Der Winzerstube, which is an amazing German restaurant down on Main Street that we met at to talk about, you know, we're going to do this. How do we do it? And that was the beginning, right?
Yes.
That was even before. I mean, Ruby wasn't even at that one.
Nope.
But we were talking about, okay, they were just, you guys were spitballing who's going to do what, who's going to do what. And I was like, you know, we discussed pretty much what everyone's role was going to be. And that was sort of, I think, where you could say that the real, like, work began, right?
Right.
It was at that little meeting we had over schnitzel.
That was where things started coming together. Actually, if you remember way back, I think you sent me a Facebook message or something, like, just after Christmas, the year we started, and, like, within a half hour of you sending me a message like, hey, you want to turn this into a musical? I was like, yes, and then I started writing the first song.
Yep.
So it was actually, there was music, like, 30 minutes then, like, right after we talked.
Well, and And, you know, it wasn't until I sort of was like, okay, I'm going to take some time off, that I was like, hey, now's my chance to actually adapt the script. And once we started, I mean, it came together really fast once I actually got off my ass and started working on it. And then, of course,
take note, children. See, this is things you can learn from Christopher R. Mim.
It was like 3 months, I think, by the time, 3-4 months when we finally finished, got the script together. And then I was like, well, I'm done. What am I going to do now? How about we're Skeeto Nazi Hunter? I mean, that was kind of my thought. And then you sort of took it and we did it. And then when we actually sat down, Hudson, that was like, okay, we're doing this. What's our plan, right? Yeah. How do we make it and actually do it? Of course, I always say this is like, I had no freaking idea. I've never done anything theater related. So it was like, I don't know what to do. You guys do it. That's kind of what it is. Like, I don't have any clue.
I said, I don't want to do it. Mike, you do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of what it was. I mean, if I would have done it, it wouldn't have been, it never probably would have happened, honestly. Because
I might have choked you.
I had no idea. I don't know how it works still. So, I mean, it was fun. I mean, just from a perspective of this, it was really fun to sort of, you know, take something I've made, write it into something else, and then say, you guys do it. And then come and see it. That was honestly one of my favorite things ever, was just like, this is what I wanted. This is how I wanted it to be. And I know that day I came to the second dress rehearsal, you could see the nerves on the faces of all the people.
Oh, yeah.
Because they knew I was there.
Nims in the house.
Oh, dear God.
Nims in the house.
And actually, there is, and this is, again, to sell the DVD, one of the special features is the Greta Kernkamp and Keelan Smith, who play Elizabeth and George, made a 5-part production video vlog. I know video blog vlog is redundant, but in case you don't know what the hell a vlog is, I wanted to say video blog so you can understand that. Even though blog itself is a weblog, so it's a video weblog, or a vlog, if you would. that included a lot of the behind the scenes stuff. But in that, they were discussing in one of them. The writer, Mims, in the house, so we're really nervous. And it was really kind of funny to watch that because they talk and you could see them, you know, they brought it up. So it was really, I don't know, it was fun. But it was great. I was really excited. So, yeah. So you guys did this, really. I mean, you made it happen. All my stuff was just sort of peripheral, like I'll do some art, I'll do this, I'll show up and take all the glory. Looking back on that beginning stage when we just started, and then looking at it now, how do you feel about the trajectory of everything? And then, I guess the other half is, how do you feel about it now, looking back? Were you happy? Were you unhappy? Would you change major things? You know, it's like, how do you feel now? So think back to when we started. How are you feeling now that you did it? It's like almost a year later from when we really, really got started. How do you feel about it? Not having seen the DVD yet.
That's a huge question.
No pressure, because we haven't seen the DVD.
Yeah, that's.
But you saw the show, and you got reactions. So, well, I mean, look at it from that perspective.
I didn't see the show. I was in the show.
I mean, the reactions and, like, you know, and doing it. And
okay, I'll go first. I can say I was extremely sick when we got started on this thing.
This
it was
is
over
true.
Years ago. I had had pneumonia for months, and trying to put it all together with that going on. And we had the deadline of the studio recordings. Mm-hmm. I had to get well for that so I could sing. And I can hear it, and I know Adam can too, on the CD. You can hear that I'm not 100%. You can hear it because basically I was like 25% of feeling that way.
Yeah.
But the process took a very long time. And like we started in
It's not like how we would do most shows. So Mike and I have done, well, and Ruby, we've all done a lot of theater together. Well, not necessarily together, but individually.
Okay. Collectively.
And collectively, thank you. That's a better word. And this is not the normal route for how you do something, especially for a new show. We, you know, throwing a studio recording in before anyone had ever performed the music was really bizarre. So that, you know, there's a lot of weird things that had to happen out of order from what we normally
do. Right, and that's perfect. It's out of order because we had to start early so we could get to the point where we could record, not just me, but everybody. I'm just, you know, I personalized it for myself. But we needed to be ready and do that. and spend time in the studio. And for the most part, I don't think anybody in the cast and a lot of the folks in the orchestra, some of them did, had any studio experience at all. So going into a studio situation with microphones in front of you and headsets on, that was an awakening of sorts for almost everybody involved. So that's that part of it. Once that part of it was over, then we had a little gap, maybe like 4 weeks or 6 weeks, and then we had to start on the theatrical aspects of it. Where, the blocking aspects, which means telling people where to stand, where to do it, how we were going to present this on the stage at the Mabel Tainter, and taking into account what the Mabel Tainter could do for us and what limitations that we had to work with there. One of the big things we had to figure out, and Adam and I went around and around and around and we were scratching our heads. And
tape measures and tape. And
how do we put the lake on the stage? How do we do that?
I think we had that discussion early on. It's like, how do you do a lake in a play?
Well,
exactly?
And so did we. I offered three or four solutions because we really didn't want to put it in the orchestra pit if we could help it.
Well,
but that's the only place it made sense.
Yeah, once you get in that, that theater is so amazing, but at the same time, it's so difficult to build sets where everybody can see because everybody's seat is really up close, but the angles are so steep and so wide that it's really hard to hide any of the magic part of the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So, but choosing that theater is the right choice because of the historical aspects of the theater and how beautiful it is. One of the 14 most beautiful theaters in the world, according to, I think it was Forbes magazine. I don't know what Forbes is doing naming beautiful theaters, but it truly is a beautiful theater. So putting it there was a good choice. Plus, I banged the microphone there.
Yeah, you're fine.
The fact that it's small enough to be able to do a show of that nature.
Yes.
If we would have done it in a larger theater in the area, it would have gotten lost.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had a couple of choices in Eau Claire, and none of them were going to work as well as the Mabel Tainter size-wise. One was too small. One didn't have the facilities that we needed. Another one was too big. State Theater was too big. So it came down to the Mabel Tainter, and I still think it's the right choice, even though we had some issues with trying to, you know, put the show on that stage and deciding that the orchestra pit and the audience itself would be the lake.
Mm-hmm.
It was the simple solution and the best one because any other way you'd be turning around and looking upstage and doing all these things that are theater no-nos to get that show done.
In other words, so, don't turn your back to the audience.
Don't turn your back to the audience. And we would have had to do it constantly had we put it on the stage. So Adam and I were racking our brains on that. So we finally came up with that solution, and I think to this day it was the best solution, and I think that anybody that decides to do that show in the future, that's the best solution, unless they're geniuses and can come up with something else.
Well,
and somebody might do it. Somebody might do it.
We had a couple of solutions, but they involved so much carpentry, and we did not have a real set builder. So
that's true too.
Or the time.
Because I can build stuff, but there was
and the budget.
There was no extra time for me to come up. I mean, I was going to deliver paint up to Adam, and I'm like, baby, I can't do it.
Well, and I know the discussion of the Mabel Tainter, one of the things I was sort of involved in was the Kickstarter campaign.
Yes.
And, there were three main goals, right? The first was just to have it, right? No, the first priority was have it at the Tainter.
Oh, you're
do
right.
Do the album.
That's right. Church
record
basement.
Record it. Right?
Tainter.
And to me, that just felt really bass-ackwards. I mean, it was like... It should be film it, record it, do it at the Tainter. Like, the Tainter should be last. From my perspective, I was like, why are we pushing so hard to do it at this one theater? Why can't we do it somewhere else? I feel like, because in my head, it's thinking, well, we want a record. We want something to sell. We want to make this live beyond this one thing. And again, that's probably the movie maker in me of just like, you make the movie and then you sell it. It's not just this one play. It's not this one show. We want this forever, right? Let's do that first. Obviously, that's not what ended up happening, but that was the thing I kind of kept arguing. It was like, why are we pushing, especially when we got a little paranoid that it wasn't maybe happening as fast as we wanted to in meeting the goals. It was like, why are we pushing so hard for this? Why is this so important?
Well, and as a theater person, and I know that Mike and Adam, whether I checked in with them or not, I know Mike and Adam had the same concern. We kind of go, duh. Of course you want it at Mabel Tanger. You want it in a real theater. You did. Oh, what? Why can't you see this stuff? You can't even. You can't even put words to it. It's like, duh. We could do it in my living room. Is that a great idea? No, but I mean, it is literally impossible to put into words, and that's one of the reasons I was so vocal with the Kickstarter and checking in with my friends at other high school theaters and professional theaters and saying, how much money do you guys get? Because it seems like so much money. It seems like such a commitment from everybody. And then you look at it and go, it's just like a MIM movie.
Yeah.
The regular theater budget versus the Monster Phantom Lake budget, even with the DVD and the CD, is like a blockbuster movie and a MIM movie.
That's kind of the funny thing, is that of all the movies I've made, the most expensive one was this one.
Good thing you had some backers.
Yeah. I mean, that's the funny part. But again, I was like, so my perspective was like, I get it. It kind of makes sense, but at the same time, there was a part of me that's like, why are you guys being so damn adamant about it? Can't we seriously? Are there seriously no other choices?
Because Ruby lights.
And that was the thing. It was like we can't. I mean, no. We want to do it, right? Does it have to be at this theater? No, I mean,
yes.
I'm thinking long term. It's like, how do we make money off it after the fact? How do we make money back? How do we do this? And that's my perspective of not being the theater, I mean, the movie guy. It's like, well, how do we make money after the fact? Well, we got to have CDs. We got to have DVDs and stuff. That should be focus number one, right? After getting it put on.
To back up Chris's point, y'all still haven't answered the question.
We can't.
No, you can't. You haven't given these two a chance to talk yet.
What was the question?
Okay, Chris, in his roundabout way, I think what he was trying to say is, why was the push for having the show at the Mabel Tainter? Please understand, even though I work in the theater industry again, I am not a theater person. So why? This is not an attack. It's why? What was it about the Mabel Tanger Theater? I know to a certain extent the answer, but please feel.
Yeah, I guess
this is not an accusatory.
Yeah, he's making the same face. Like, why? How can I explain why I breathe? How can
I
explain?
I can't reach that knife you're sticking in my back.
No, and artists. I just I didn't understand because of my particular perspective, right. Of it was like, I mean, we had sort of email discussions about this too. It was like, are there seriously? I mean, are there like a college theaters or a state? You know, even a high school theater. You know, what was the push on that? Because that seemed. I felt, and this is me being sort of outside. I felt that, and maybe not you so much, Mike, but you guys more than anything else, Adam and Ruby, just like. Why is it seemingly so important we do it at the frickin' Mabel Tanger? Why can't we think about, like, that's like the cherry on top as opposed to the ice cream itself?
Well, so I actually spent... I'm going to answer your question and be, like, super scientific about this.
Ooh,
go a different way.
I like
so
scientific.
From the financial right side of this, actually, it seems like it would be cheaper to do it someplace tiny. But I actually went through, like, part of it was seeing what other theaters we could rent for the budget we had.
Yes, you did.
And actually, the Mabel Tanger, it was about $500 a day to rent the entire theater, dressing rooms, all the space, use the lights, everything. That was a steal compared to one place. I tried the university, and they basically quoted me the price of like a Humvee or something. so you could buy rent the theater at the university, a really bad one without any fly space or lighting, for about $35,000 for the week.
Wow.
Or we could rent the Mabel Tanger for about $4,000. So well, that was part of it. And then we also looked at some theaters where you could do basically a split of the door where you do 50-50. And actually, with the number of tickets we sold, we would have paid them more to do it in a tiny theater compared to just paying a flat fee and doing it at the Mabel Tanger. So financially, it actually comes out. We came out ahead to have it in a nicer space.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. And
there's
a good answer.
That is the best answer yet. Yeah. Other than I love my wife, but she's like...
Because you had to.
Yeah, exactly. I am all emotion.
Now, there were some other things. Exactly. We talked about some other things.
You guys, you're Bones. Which one of you is Spock?
I can be Spock. I might be the Spock.
That was pretty Spock.
I'm very logical about everything.
Yeah.
But Mike keeps the most sane. I had called in some people who I knew who knew that there were alumni, and I said, how much would it be for an alumni to rent this space seriously? Because alumni always get a better deal. I called the downtown theaters in Minneapolis, because a lot of people are like, well, Chris is from Minneapolis, though, so why wouldn't we do... And that was like buying six Humvees. And after all is said and done, I'm sort of glad that we, thank you backers, made enough money to have it at a proper theater, because I'm thinking about it now going, you know, if this was at a high school... It would have felt like a high school show, but because it was at a professional theater, it felt like a professional show.
And no, I mean, ultimately, and in the end, it all came together. Ultimately, in the end, it all came together.
Yes.
And I'm really happy it was, but I was just, again, I think for me, it was like, I don't get it. I just want to have, you know, a CD and stuff to sell.
Because you're a pragmatist, I think is the good
word. Yeah, well, I'm looking at it from a very sort of different perspective of, like, how do we make sure that, that after that last performance, it just doesn't die.
Yes.
That's what I didn't want. I wanted, and I think we discussed this a little bit too, is that, you know, this, because it was the first time anyone ever would do this, I wanted to make sure that this production and what we were doing was setting the standard for sort of all future productions.
Okay, so that goes back to what I said. Also with the Mabel Tainer, being the beautiful theater that it is, it is a true theater. If you said, we were going to do, hey, it's the Monster of Phantom Lake, the musical at Podunk High School.
Yay, go Podunk!
Go Podunk! Like Podunk.
You know, I mean, yeah. Go Skunks!
Yeah. But...
Podunk
Skunk. I know too many shows.
We put a professional on a professional stage in one of the most beautiful theaters in the world for the least amount of money that we could do it for.
And that was awesome.
Well,
and it all comes together that way.
And the other, we had a couple of other reasons. Part of it was we wanted to try to split the difference between the people coming from the Twin Cities area to make that drive just a little shorter for them. And we knew we'd also get a draw from Eau Claire naturally just with the people we cast who are from Eau Claire. Mm-hmm. And we had people in the cast from Menominee, so we were really drawing from a whole bunch of different areas to try and, you know, maximize the audience that we'd get for this first showing. And then, you know, having a live show, there's the opportunity to sell more of that merchandise and try and make back part of it with having people come in where you know, if you don't do a live show, it's kind of tough to do it. And the other bonus was when we recorded the video of the show, then it's in that nice space instead of being in, you know, some basement somewhere. So the sets and the theater,
don't make fun of things being made in basements.
Wrong with basements.
That's fine for a movie.
We don't even have the show without that
basement. But
none of this would have happened without
a lot of that movie was filmed outside. Shush.
And another thing, and one more thing, we had also talked about like the possibility of busing everyone, but there are a lot of people in the cast, and there's a lot of people in the crew, and there's a lot of people in the orchestra, and it would have been prohibitive to have everyone drive that far and put that much energy in.
So it was
the perfect choice.
Cheapest and best space it ended up being.
I mean, I have no complaints about it. I mean, it worked out.
Sounds like you do.
It was when we were talking about the Kickstarter, I didn't understand the idea of like I said, it felt backwards. It's like, no, we should be thinking about long term as opposed to doing it here. You know, how do we make sure we have a DVD and then maybe a cast album and then... you know, putting it in the Tainter is like the, like I said, the cherry on top as opposed to the ice cream. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's like, no, we get enough. We can do it in this grand space. Whereas, because our first goal, had we just met it, was we were just going to do it in the Tainter, and that was sort of it, right? And I probably would have filmed it anyway. I mean, that really didn't cost a lot of money, although now it goes into the DVDs and all that stuff. But you know what I mean? It's like in my perspective, it was like, no, I didn't care. And this has kind of been how I make movies. I don't care where we do it. I just want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And so for me, it was like, stop worrying about it. Let's just get enough to do it. Who cares where we do it? If we can do it in this great theater, awesome. But again, that was just sort of the back and forth. Obviously, you guys won anyway and overruled me. But I was the dissent on that. Was just like, well, why are we doing it? Because I know there was some stress when we were doing the Kickstarter about, you know, pulling it off. Just because Kickstarters are invariably... stressful.
let me throw one thing out for the Mabel Tainer, and then we'll wrap a bow in that particular conversation. For the record, I had a vested interest in seeing the show at the Mabel Tainer because I was part of the team that helped restore that theater way back in the day.
It's all about you.
So was I.
And so was my wife. So was Sheree. Ruby.
That's
whatever
the real reason Ruby really wanted to do it.
Well, I had to do that there? Okay, sorry. I'm sidebarring his sidebar, Bo. The company we used to work at, no longer in business. I did the estimate. He did the drawing. Michael, my manager, did the project management. Kevin, the guy who sits across from me, did the turn on. Dave King, who Mark now works with, did their this and that and the other. Everybody had seen the Mabel Tainter except me.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like, people had actually gone there and seen it or did another rigging inspection or did the install or did that or you field check. I'm like, what about Ruby?
None for you.
But how many of them did shows there? Boom.
So I really did want to see the Mabel Tainter because, to a certain extent, it was a big deal for my company because having been awarded the contract to help restore the actual stage itself, not the house. That was not part of our contract. It was just the stage. And being the guy doing it, that was cool. Because, yes, ultimately Forbes did name it one of the top 14 most beautiful theaters in the country.
And you had something to do
with that. I had something to do with that. Well, so did Ruby, and so did 9 other people that she just listed off. But the other thing I wanted to...
No, it's just you guys.
It's pretty much me.
Screw those other guys.
The other one thing that is still true to this day, again, my lovely wife told you guys earlier that we are recording this on February 14th, 2017.
Happy VD, everybody.
Hey, you too, buddy.
Hopefully... Actually, let me start that again. Mantra Phantom Lake the Musical set a record that is still held to this day in terms of Kickstarter.
As Ruby's favorite... Wait, what?
You also...
Did it really?
To this day, you still hold the record for the most money put towards a production.
High five.
A theatrical production.
Nice. Bam.
It is still in hold till today. Bam. I just looked. I looked this morning.
Before. No kidding.
No other Kickstarter for a theatrical production has gained as much money as the Monster Phantom Lake the Musical! Got.
Shazam.
So.
Good on us. Anyway.
None that even gotten close. I'm not going to say the number, but yeah, there was...
Super.
The closest one was $3,000 less.
No, we should do a little shout out here. Erica Svano was our orchestra conductor for this, and she actually helped us. She was kind of like the Kickstarter guru who advised us on how to do a better Kickstarter because she knows that most theatrical productions don't have a very good track record. And she'd actually produced her own board game called... Marrying Mr. Darcy. So she had sold this board game on Kickstarter for like she did like a $20,000 or $30,000 Kickstarter and said, no, this is how you do it. And she kept kind of telling me, no, you need to fix this, do it this way. And so we probably owe her a lot of thanks just in helping us kind of organize it and make do it in a way that was going to make it happen.
I can't throw fire this time.
So,
well, I think we should all take a moment to thank all the people who did support our Kickstarter and made it happen.
We're going
to
say them really fast right here.
So let's read them all.
Everybody talk at the same time.
Do the thing where we read them and then just speed it up.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
No, we had a lot of cool people and a lot of
Are those people listed on the DVD?
They are listed in the end credits.
Fantastic.
And, you know, they're in the end credits. Yeah. So. I mean, and the cool thing, too, is like there are... you know, half names of people I sort of recognize from movie backers. My brother, I know, gave like a bunch of money, which is weird because he's never given any money toward any of my movies.
Which, Chuck?
My older brother, Chuck.
Yeah, nice.
Otherwise, thanks, there's
Chuck.
Another Chuck Mim, unless he lives in Maine. He's living, so, I mean, it was pretty cool to see a lot of names that I recognized, but then there was a lot of other ones that I didn't, which was cool. Yeah. You could see there were some parents of some of the actors.
Some cast members and orchestra and crew members who were all really generous, too, that they were doing it because they wanted to see it succeed. So we really owe them a lot of thanks.
Yeah. We're actually, like Cookie's wife, Miss Nancy, she...
what did she do?
She played in the orchestra.
Well, yes.
Multiple instruments. What did she think?
Hold on. You just sidecarred in a really bad way right there.
I did.
Yeah, I'm like, what?
He was talking about money, and then you're like, and what about Nancy? And Cook's like, wait a minute, what?
You also said a lot of people donated their time.
Right.
Were the orchestra people amongst those group?
Well, for...
Or
for
is that weird conversation?
No, it's not a weird conversation.
We didn't... I mean, we really... I mean, we gave our all the people who helped in the show, because they were driving so much to get from Eau Claire to Menominee or coming from other places way out of town. We gave them a little bit of travel stipend,
but oh, cool.
I'm sure it didn't even cover all their mileage. I mean, it was kind of a pittance compared to the amount of time and energy they spent.
And for anyone who's listening, if you haven't already, schedule A that stuff. Come on now. Itemize.
Nice.
Itemize.
Now, that's why I said what I did, because he said not only people that donated their money, they donated time.
I missed the time.
Nancy's donated her time.
Oh, apparently. Well, yeah. And the rest of the orchestra, of course. And then we had, you know, crew members that were there as well.
Stage hands and all that sort of thing.
Michelle, Nancy's sister, was a stage manager for us, and she's done a lot of stage managing, so she was a great choice for that. And she knew exactly who to gather up to make that stage crew and keep her eye on them and get them cracking. All very nice young ladies, I might add, that I've worked with as well, directing them in shows. Very, very nice, very, very talented. And they were willing to work not on stage, but backstage, because it was for the show, the greater good, and, you know, and because Michelle asked them.
Yeah. Well, and that's the wonderful thing about theater people. I mean, of course, we'd all love to get paid, and of course, we're thankful. That's true. Of course, we're thankful for that, but I do think theater people do it for the love a little bit more than the average people. I'm so.
I would say a lot of, like, indie movie people do it for the love, too, because none of them are getting paid either.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Actually, can I tell a side story about doing it for the love?
Apparently, all these are...
On Valentine's Day, I don't think that's appropriate at all.
This is actually just, on a total side note, because we're still talking about the Mimiverse in general, you know, the new movie, Demon with the Atomic Brain, is currently being filmed. We have a new actor in who's playing one of the leads. His name is Tyler Haynes. He basically reminds me a lot of Dan Shervin, but not... We were shooting this past weekend, and we did 3 straight days, really long days, of a lot of stuff. We filmed like 20 pages this weekend.
Dear God.
On the Saturday, when we were doing the longest day, he shows up, and this is the first time this has really ever happened. He showed up in the morning. Everyone's, Mandy, who was in the Monster Phantom Lake the Musical, is playing one of the leads in the new movie. She's there getting her hair done. He shows up. And he's got a bag full of food, and he's got like a crock pot full of meatballs under his arm. And it's like, what are you doing, dude? We feed you. And he's like, no, I'm having so much fun, and I love this so much. I just wanted to chip in. So he brings it in, and it was just like, well, that's new. But I think he made all the other actors be like, you dick. Now we got this stuff.
That's the first thing I thought of. I'm like, wait, I haven't even started shooting my scenes yet. I'm
now
not
I
bringing
bring meatballs.
I'm not bringing meatballs, punk.
Bring you know, little smokies are cool too. I mean,
I could get behind little smokies.
But so that was one of those things, sort of doing for love. It's like, dude, you're not getting paid, and here you are spending money to feed all of us when we make a point to at least feed you, but you're doing it. And again, it's that same thing. It's like,
what,
awesome,
a sweet man.
Really nice.
One of the things we had done on this show, bringing it back to the Monster Phantom Lake the Musical.
Exclamation.
I just want to make sure that Tyler got a little extra view right there, because that was...
I'm pounding my chest.
Tyler, here's something we do here at the Mimiverse Bonfire Podcast. If you heard us say that, send one of us a message, or podcast@steuphoria.com, spell it out. Send us a message saying Bonfire Unicorn.
Bonfire-scented unicorn.
There it is.
That's all it has to say. That just lets us know you heard it.
Yeah, yeah.
I should say, too, then the next day Mandy brought cupcakes. So he set a trend. So
these people.
I hope you're listening, Mark, when you're on set.
Oh, Mandy, if you're listening, bonfire-scented podcast.
Send it to podcast@steuphoria.com.
Sorry, babe, go ahead.
One of the things I was going to say was, we had you guys both on the show before, but it was extremely early in the process.
So
extremely early in the process. You guys had not even launched your Kickstarter at that point.
No.
So you guys talked a little bit about the Kickstarter, but let's take us through a timeline. Maybe let's go from a month away from opening day.
Actually, before we do that, I have one really, really important question.
I'm all ears.
How much do you guys hate each other now?
No more than I did
before. We're still speaking.
Yeah.
All right.
We're here.
Liars.
We're sitting liars. Approximately.
You're only here to make sure
apart.
That he doesn't say anything bad. He's only here to make sure she doesn't. Uh-huh. You're all keeping each other honest. Then we walk out like, I hate those bastards.
Yep. And we're exactly like scratching distance away from each other. Nobody's
see, you all, or you are all sitting pretty far away. I don't know. Just your
just
body
sat
language.
With the mic.
Your body language says.
Well, Adam, Adam
Mark's doing that on purpose because he knows the truth.
I don't know nothing.
He's but seriously, that is a good question.
So take us, if you can remember, what was it like about, let's say, let's go from a month before opening day. What you guys have not had Tech Week yet. Tech Week is something we'll talk about towards the end.
A
so
month
you guys
is
are
so unfair.
So this puts you about what mid June.
Mid June.
Right?
So you guys are at this point, the cast CD had probably already been recorded because you were getting it mastered at that point.
Yeah.
Probably mad building sets because I know my driveway became white after a certain point. There's still paint in it.
It is Trump's America.
So I want to take you back just a little bit further than
oh,
that.
Go ahead. Go
because,
ahead.
Because so for me, we're just, it became one gigantic blur of trying to get things done and meet all these deadlines was probably November. So that's when we did our first table read. And that was really exciting. So there was a big push. Basically, I was just scrambling to make sure I had, you know, music and lyrics done for everything so that we could read it with Chris's full finished script and it would all make sense so the cast would kind of be able to start practicing.
And you can listen to that on the podcast.
Yeah,
we have that on the podcast.
And from there, for me, it was just like, at that point, it was like, okay, now I have to finish all of the music and the orchestra parts to get ready for the cast recording.
Oh, crap, I have to finish this
now. Yeah, yeah. So it's like, well, we've got all the music and lyrics for the cast, but we don't necessarily have all those parts for the orchestra. So it was, now you have to write that. And then, you know, we made it, lots of rehearsing, we got ready, we did the cast CD over a few weeks and then a few days of polishing it up afterwards, worked on mixing. And then after that point, it was like, oh, crap, now we have to finish writing that music that happens in between these songs that we didn't need on the CD. So, like, all the scene changes and the music that happens underneath certain scenes, that all had to be written, too. So it was like a push to finish that. And in the meantime, Mike was working on making sure that we had kind of all of our ducks in a row. He was figuring out his blocking and working with the cast, starting rehearsals, you know, rehearsing some of the music that had been changed from there. And in June, what you said, it was just kind of a that was the next gigantic scramble for trying to build all the set, actually trying to figure out the sets, because like right. Mike said before, we weren't quite sure how to do the lake, and we couldn't build the sets until we knew what the stage had to look like to do the show. So it was a whole lot of kind of trying to put it together like a 1,000-piece puzzle, and you have to get certain things done before you could do other things. And
yeah,
actually, and, where did you guys end up rehearsing then before moving into the Mabel Tinker?
Oh, well, see, that I was going to add on when Adam was done.
Go ahead.
I apologize.
We had to find a place to rehearse.
Oh, you did?
and it's like I went through some certain channels, and I just basically put it out on Facebook. Can anybody help us out? We need a place. You know, we can't use the theaters in town because they're rehearsing their own shows.
Yeah.
You know, and both theaters in town usually rehearse more than one show at the same time. So trying to put our show in there wasn't going to happen. My good friend Sarah Antonsen, who I've known for years, used to work dinner theater with her, is the executive director of the Boys and Girls Club of the Greater Eau Claire area. They had just bought one of the biggest churches in town, and were converting it into the Boys and Girls Club.
Oh, wow.
And she said to me, we are not going to do anything with the sanctuary. We're not going to do anything in the main church itself. We're just working on the school part of the building and the gym. There's a gym in that place. It's an unbelievable building, perfect for a Boys and Girls Club. But if you can use the sanctuary, it's yours, free. Just let us know when you're going to be there and when you're getting out.
That is awesome.
And
it was
so,
an amazing
but
gift.
By the way, there's no air conditioning, and watch out for the bats.
That's right.
And also, we're doing renovations.
And no sooner did we start
than
they decided to tear up the road in front of the church, the city, and they turned the water off and doing rehearsals without being able to drink any water or go to the bathroom. That was fun, too.
I think the cast left a lot of treats for the club.
Yes. When they finally turned the water back on, more than water was just flowing in that building.
See, I'm glad I asked that question. I didn't know that. Did you know that?
No.
Oh, my God. That is
so
amazing.
That's why that's in the thanks in the end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They got their whole image in. They were like, well, you don't really have to do anything. And Mike was like, yeah, we do.
Yeah. And basically, Sarah said, no, it's all good. You know, it's all good.
Right.
We're
Adam
fine.
Was like, give us your image. We're putting it in the playbill.
We need to put it in there. Just give you promotion. So there was that part. The other thing, too, around June is when we called in our choreographer.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Tessa Hoggle came in. We just needed, it's not a big dance show.
No.
By anybody who's seen it and anybody who will see it will notice that there's not a lot of dancing going on. However, the opening number required choreography.
Yes.
And there are some other things in there that required, we were just, I did a lot of it myself. And by saying that I did a lot of the choreography myself, meaning moving to the music, that's not exactly dancing.
I got it.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like we need to move during this music and we can do things like couple of songs I added a few little flares that's not real choreography, but that carries us through most of the show. However, in the places where we really needed it, we needed someone like Tessa, who's choreographed many shows, and she came in and she watched a rehearsal and then came back a week later with everything that she needed to take care of and tinkered with that, and we got that all done. That was in June,
and
too.
I feel like Tessa just totally got the spirit of the show. She came in with such funny and creative choreography. It's stuff that we would have never thought of.
Right.
And she taught it to everybody, and it was
a brilliant way
great.
Of working, too, because I was reviewing the Monster of Phantom Lake cast group, and she would teach it to two of the actors and video it and put it on the group so that everyone could look at it and learn their stuff. I mean, it's amazing what you can get done with the technology today. I mean, I'm an hour and a half away from you guys. We talked on the phone. We sent pictures. We, texted back and forth.
Well, and even just from the very beginning stages, technology is such a huge part of this, of just Adam being in Wisconsin and me being in Minnesota. It's like, he would write some, send it to me. We had the whole
file.
Google Docs set up for everything, you know, so we could sort of collaborate with having to be in the same room.
I don't think we ever actually wrote anything together while we were in the same room. I think it all went
back
and
forth. No, it was always
just back
and forth on Google Docs, email and Google Docs, yeah. So, I mean, that was well, and even just being able to, you would send me MIDI files of here's how this should sound. Here's the lyrics. Here's how it sounds right now. And he'd send me just, you know, recordings off his stuff of
that
what it sounds
like. That was amazing software, too.
Oh, yeah. That's come a long way.
Excuse me. My head just exploded.
So the other part about June, not to jump in.
Go ahead.
Was we finally had the CD, and we could actually rehearse with
the
CD. And you name another musical that you can rehearse with your own voices on the CD.
And the CD actually matched what we were rehearsing. We didn't have to change a whole bunch of stuff like on every other CD.
It just never happens. And it was so helpful to everybody.
Because you're already under the gun. You're already in a crunch.
Well, we had a long time to rehearse, so we weren't under that much of a crunch. But the fact that we added that just added that much more help to the cast. It's like, okay, now we've got this. It's your voices with the music exactly the way it should be played, and with the cuts and all that, and the underscores that Adam had written for, you know, timing out dialogue to get into vocals and other things.
Which
that
are never in the CD, so you don't know
never
how long
CD.
Those time changes
but we
are.
We had all of that,
and
we were able to rehearse all of that in June, which I believe made the show that much better on opening night.
I feel like I should jump in for the people who have never rehearsed a musical. What would normally happen is, if you're lucky, you have a rehearsal piano player, and they would play as much as they can out of the book for the cast when they're rehearsing. And what Mike was talking about is, you know, that never sounds like what it actually sounds like when you have a 14-piece orchestra playing that same stuff, because stuff has to be different.
Yeah.
And so that's what made it so much easier. So it didn't throw the cast off when we were finally rehearsing with the orchestra and they were hearing all these different parts.
And to be fair, it was off of a boombox, but in a sanctuary, it's made for music and sound, and so it wasn't near as bad as sometimes, and then, you know, you'd just cue up the next one and be like, okay, now this is the scene change, pay attention. And it was also nice as a lighting designer, because I would only go to full run-throughs. It's not worth my time to go through anything, go to anything except for a full act run-through. And so I was there for very, very little of it, but frequently I would show up and Adam be like, here you go, and hand me the new CD with the new stuff and the scene change music or the new thing, the thing that we changed on the thing. And well, now I have a CD for if I'm at the theater at 10 o'clock at night when the actor's being released for 2 hours, you know, or 3 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning, I can sit and listen and get my timing right. I mean, invaluable having these things.
Yeah.
I got to say two things. One on the CD, that's just a side note of where I screwed up.
What?
On the CD.
Don't worry, so did I.
I authored it, right? But one of the things you can do is you create these files called DDP files that they use to then, you know, they're like perfect. This is the CD that all the CD players recognize, all this stuff. One of the things you can do now is you can put in song titles and like stuff like that, that if you have a car or a CD player or whatever that recognizes it, you'll see it coming up.
Works.
And they're all perfect except for one.
What?
Which is, I messed up on the title, so when it comes up on your car, instead of it saying, Bones, I Tell You Bones, it says, Bones, I Tell You Bone.
Yes!
I'm like, damn it! Every time!
A Valentine's Day tie-in.
Every day! Everything I do is always one little stupid thing. Like, if you watch Where Skeeto Nazi Hunter at the end, when it has a little, like, FBI warning thing saying, don't do it, it says, you might be... criminal prosection instead of prosecution.
Prosection.
God dang it!
There you go.
No, the last thing I want to say, though, about the music, Adam, and this is to kiss your ass a little more. It is Valentine's Day.
that's not what you're supposed to kiss.
Well, maybe you're into that. I don't know.
I'm glad I showered. So.
Well,
yeah, I got to go somewhere else.
Is that there is something really, truly magical about the soundtrack. I'm not talking just about the recording. I'm talking about the songs and the music. That there's something in it that sort of sets this apart from other things. There's a certain level of, like, I don't know, timeless magic to it that I just, like, I'm always impressed whenever I hear these songs, and I'm just like, A, they're catchy as hell. And B, they're just so well put together. And there's like these, you know, and this is the sort of, I think, probably movie maker in me, where it's like, you can catch the themes that run throughout, which is a very nice touch. I like that you did the sort of like I do with the movies, where you're paying tribute to different things with each song. Because, mm-hmm. You know, I try to, you know, I made the Big Bug movie or this movie or that movie. You know, that's sort of like a hint back to those old ones. You did that with the songs too. Like you said, yeah. Okay, this is my, you know, this one. This is my, you know, Gilbert and Sullivan one or whatever. There's something about it that, as far as I'm concerned, it's the music that absolutely makes the show so much better than it ever sort of has the right to be, as far as I'm concerned.
I really appreciate that. I'm glad that you noticed those kinds of things. And I mean, when I was putting it together, I feel like the show or the movie itself really... I told you this before. I feel like it really lent itself to music. It feels like, you know, it feels like there should be a song here, and it always kind of made sense. And you know, hopefully part of what you're enjoying about the music is there's a lot in there where you can listen to it once and just kind of enjoy it and hopefully catch some of the themes. But the more times you listen to it, if you keep listening deeper and deeper, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of, like, I call them kind of Easter eggs hidden in there. So if you are a big if you're a big MIM movie fan, or if you're just like a old movie sci-fi fan, hopefully you're going to catch a whole lot of references in there that maybe don't stick out the first time.
Well, you know, I got to say, one of my favorite songs in the entire thing is Bones, I Tell You Bones, which is, when I first heard it, I was like, what the hell is even going on? There's so much going on.
It didn't make sense to me.
That it's like, yeah, it's like, what the hell? This almost sounds like noise. But it's almost like it's challenging in that way, where it's like, it's not instantly you're like, because there's so many, there's the two concurrent stories basically happening, right? Where you have George telling what's happening, the professor not believing it, and they're playing off each other, right? And then I think the point when I realized, I was like, holy crap, no, this song is brilliant, is when the girls come in and they start doing the Afraid of Everything, which is a nice callback to that. But then the lyrics of that actually work with what's going on, you know, because they're not sure if it's real or in their head.
Right.
And that's what Professor Jackson's like. It's a hallucination. He's like, no, it's not a hallucination. It's a hallucination. They're like, I don't know what's going on. And it's just like all that interplay between them. Yeah. That's when I realized, after really sort of understanding and getting a feel for the song, because you really have to kind of
get a tough song.
To know the song, and then you realize how
musical way to deal
like,
with stuff.
Okay, this is actually awesome. It's like once that all kicked in, I was like, holy shit. This song is awesome. And well, so that's my absolute favorite one.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's one of those, like I said before, it the movie just feels like it kind of lent itself to that. So you have all this kind of confusion happening in that scene where people are arguing, and that was like the perfect, it just seemed like the perfect place to have one of those, they call it a double song in musical theater. So like the one that lots of people know, if you think of Music Man, where they sing Lie to Rose and Sweet and Low, that the part where there's a barbershop quartet,
yes,
and Marion singing on the porch. So there's two different melodies happening at the same time, and that's kind
of
what happens there.
All of Les Mis.
Yeah, or all of Les Mis. Like, think of the end of the first act of Les Mis, where there's like three or four songs happening. So that's actually what's happening there, is it actually turns
complex.
Goes from a song into a double song, and then actually a triple song. Where
well, see, and that's the beauty of the fact that we got someone like you who actually understands these things and thinks about these things and is like, I want to do that, and then did it, is that it added that level of extra awesome, you know what I mean? Where it's like, it wasn't just like I wrote what, like Paddling Along, which is just a cheesy little pop song.
Oh,
right?
But it's so fun.
Oh, no, no.
But it is. I mean, it's so simple as a song, because it's only one riff throughout the entire thing, right?
It's a Muppet
with little
song.
Extra things. And they just, you know, they're singing their song. But you are like, no, it's a double song. Technically, it's a triple song. It's like, whatever the hell that is, you know, I don't even know that.
Science. Mirror.
Yeah, because I mean, I was just in like bad rock band. So it's like three chords. That's good, you know. But so that one has always been.
It's really kind of nice, though, because I know when we first put together, I was like, we have to include the songs from the MIM movies, because that's like everybody's going to expect this. And you have songs. How many movie makers have songs?
Yeah. Yeah.
Movies, so I mean I think it's nice to have maybe a break from the stuff that I wrote, so that people.
But even then, you added to each one to make them that much better. You know, I mean, like the little things we do with a rock and a rolling. I think that's probably more Joel than anything else. Oh yeah,
he's so dirty.
Once Joel figured out what he needed to do there, he just went for it.
That was basically the whole the cast trying to keep each other from laughing the entire time.
You know, Adam even incorporated, what's that horrible, horrible song that I sang at the end of House of Goats?
Oh, yeah, the
Ray of Sunshine.
Which Adam wrote,
in the Act 2 on track,
yes.
There's Ray of Sunshine in there. It's like, oh, my God.
Easter eggs aplenty.
Easter eggs.
Well, and then, too, even the going through all the Mimiverse movies is a nice touch, where it's just like in that lyrics of that sort of reprise of...
Yeah, there's...
Just, I don't know.
There's certainly stuff in there that, like, depending on how hardcore a fan you are, you're going to get more out of it than other people. Hopefully everybody enjoys it.
You know, it's like the flashlight thing, you know?
Right.
It's such a dumb little thing, but I keep trying to tell new actors, because we just filmed that this weekend. I was talking about what we're filming this weekend. We did a scene where does the flashlight thing, right? And everyone's like... They're kind of like, why can't we just turn on the flashlights? I'm like, no, you have to do it this way. And Christian Finch, who's in this, who's in Weresquito, he's like, yeah, we have to do it this way. And they're like, why? They're like, he's like, you'll find out at the premiere.
You just have to do it.
It's like people, I'm like, people will cheer and you'll be like, what the hell? But that, seriously, it's just a thing. You got to do it.
There you go. Let's take a break. This sounds like a good spot to take a pause. When we come back in part two, that's when we're going to start talking about the ramp up, the intensity that builds into Monster of Phantom Lake, the musical.
Exclamation point.